Hello, my lovely listeners. Welcome back to the part two of Let's Queer Up on the Indian Shrink podcast. And you're listening to your host, Shibika Singh Chindawat. So I'm sure from the previous episode, all of you got the basic idea about what gender means, what sexuality means, and what does bodies, having different bodies mean. And how, you know, what does the whole abbreviation LGBTQIA plus community stand for? This was just to give you an overview. Now you must be wondering, why is she talking about all this? What is the importance of all this? Yes, a very, very valid question, and all of these questions will be addressed in this episode, that is the part two of Let's Queer Up. So I am someone who comes from a place of a lot of privilege and power when compared to the queer community, or let's say anybody else who falls in the margins of our society. Now, you must be wondering why she's saying she has a lot of privilege and power. So I'll explain that. I'll deconstruct that for you. When I say I have a lot of privilege and power, what I basically mean is I belong to that part of the society where things just come naturally to me in terms of you know, rights, in terms of having a voice, in terms of you know, being respected in the society. That means because I am an able-bodied, that is, I am someone who's does not have a disability. I'm an able-bodied person. I belong to the Rajput caste or community. I am someone who is Hindu by religion. I belong to the upper class society. I'm a heterosexual, you know, cisgendered female. So by default, having these markers or having these features ticked marked by the society, which are, you know, seen as normal in our society, I get that privilege. I come with that privilege. And when I say power, I'm also referring to the power of, you know, having human rights, of having legality, the aspect of legality. Because I am from having these so-and-so, you know, tick marks, I am by default legal. I am by default someone who is valid. Which may not be the case for the queer community, which may not be the case for a lot of people on the margin. And I also say, stress on the point of power, because I'm also a mental health professional. I'm a clinical, licensed clinical psychologist. That means I have the power to diagnose someone as being normal or abnormal, having a disability or a disease versus someone who's healthy. And I want to stress here, I want to take a moment and stress here that being a licensed mental health professional in India, I in no way condone or practice any form of conversion therapy or electroconvulsive treatment for the LGBTQIA plus individuals, and nor do I support it, because it's completely unethical. It is completely inhuman for anyone to practice such obsolete, such, you know, I don't have the words, right words to also, you know, describe the kind of horrendous treatments that exist for just, you know, how to, for just trying to ignore the realities of people. So I want to just take a moment and just stress on the fact that because I come from a place of privilege and power, it becomes all the more my responsibility to put this message out to people who are like me, to acknowledge that people, other identities and other realities also exist amongst us, and we have to give them their due right, their due respect. And nobody should have to ever prove themselves, prove their worth in order to be treated in the right manner, in order to be given basic human rights. And that's just one thing I want to constantly stress before I proceed. The other thing that I wanted to also talk about before I get into the details of what the realities of queer community and the queer folks is like, I want to say that I work from a very queer feminist lens. That is why I'm aware of the power differences and the disparity in the society, in the socio-political context. And I am also doing this. I want to put this out there because I identify myself as a queer ally, a queer and trans ally. And when I say I'm an ally, I hope that through my podcast, that even you would be able to begin your journey, begin your process of becoming an ally, because becoming an ally is not just about reading the right things or just sort of going to pride parades. It's also about constantly checking your own emotions. It's also about constantly checking your own judgments, your own biases, and most importantly, your own lens of privilege. Because that, there are certain things we just don't question because it just comes so naturally to us. It was given to us so naturally, handed to us without any, for us to prove anything. And that's why I just assume that we don't happen to see it in the other aspect. We don't end up seeing it as that, okay, for other people, this is something that they have to probably fight for. This is something that they have to raise their voices against. Yeah, against or for that matter, right? So I hope that through my podcast, you will be able to provide support to the queer folks and folks who fall on the margins, and take the journey towards becoming an ally. So in part two, I was wondering how should I take this forward? When I say I hope you're able to take your journeys in the direction, or how you, I hope you're able to start your process of becoming an ally. I was thinking to myself, what is the first step in doing that? I mean, apart from knowing the basic, understanding of what the queer and trans community comprises of, what is the other way to move forward? And I think the best way to move forward is to help you all understand a few misconceptions that exist around the community or about the community. So in part two, that's going to be my major effort, trying to sort of demystify or deconstruct some of the pre-existing notions or some of the false ideas or concepts around the queer community. So let's get into it. So number one, of course, is that most people think or unconsciously end up saying that people can choose however or whoever they want to identify as, and it's completely everybody has a right to choose who they are. I also made that mistake in early on in my own journey, and I want to let you all know that that is the biggest misconception that we have, that it's a choice. It is not a choice. It's an inherent biological thing, okay? It's not something that someone chooses to become at certain point in their life. It's to help you understand, it's as simple as I did not choose to be a female. I did not choose to be a person who's attracted towards men. It's just something that I was born with. It was something that was always within me. And it's just about me realizing it at some point in my life. For me, because I said I come from a place of privilege and power, because I'm a heterosexual, cisgendered female. For me, that realization was not so tough because the society welcomes it, because the society celebrates this kind of realization. Whereas for someone who's in who identifies themselves as a homosexual or as a transgendered person or pansexual or genderqueer or the different, you know, identities, of course, anything outside of the norm, it would have been, or it is often very difficult for those people to come out. It is often very difficult for people to get to that realization. That is why also oftentimes we see that a lot of queer and trans folk start, you know, admitting their realities very late in their lives, because the society or the conditioning, the upbringing, or the society, you know, the cultural understanding does not allow you to explore that, does not allow you to celebrate your unique individuality. Having said that, I want to again stress, please, please understand that this is not a choice. This is just as normal as you probably getting attracted towards a female or a male if you're the opposite sex, if you're the heterosexual, if you identify as heterosexual, male or female. And it's just as simple as that. It's not someone chooses. Please, please know that. Now moving on to the next misconception. I think this is going to be a major one, and I want to take my time to stress or sort of help you understand this misconception, is that it is not important for their identity to have to make sense for you. Please listen to my words. It is not at all important for anyone else's identity or, you know, their identity to make sense to you. It should make sense to them. That's all. Period. A lot of times, you know, we end up having these questions about why does this person feel like this, or why is this person with so and so individual, or why does this person identify in this manner. And these whys, these questions are not coming from a place of, you know, inclusiveness or curiosity that would eventually lead to a possibility of acceptance, but it's coming from a place of judgment. It's coming from a place of anything that will make you uncomfortable, anything that will bring in a lot of discomfort within you. So when it's bringing in a lot of discomfort for you, you do not want to acknowledge it. And you often, you know, sort of say that, oh, this doesn't make sense, this is probably pathology, maybe this is a disease, maybe this is an abnormality, maybe this is, you know, something that's unhealthy, this is not right, and we have all these ways of defining it. But I want to tell you again, like I stressed in part one, all gender sexual identities are normal and natural, and all bodies are normal and natural. Please, please get this straight and try to say this aloud to yourself, because it's only, you know, I understand the struggles that, you know, yes, because, you know, our society, our culture hasn't yet opened its arms towards the possibility of various realities and identities existing amongst us. That is why also a lot of people have a hard time in accepting it. But that doesn't mean that you just turn a blind eye towards it. Yeah, it's very important to start acknowledging, because the first step towards any kind of learning, any kind of growth, any kind of expansion is acknowledgement. That is the first step. And then, of course, once you start acknowledging things, then you'll be becoming more aware of it also. You'll be more mindful of it also. And you'll start, you know, you'll start your process or journey in that direction then. Yeah. The next misconception is, of course, related to, it's a sort of a follow-up of the second one. It's that there is not, you know, a lot of people say, oh, there's very little knowledge out there. You know, there's very little resources out there for us to know about the queer community or to know about the trans community. Most people will say the only queer community that we know about is homosexuals or gays or lesbians, or what is being gender queer, what is being gender fluid, or you know, they'll just say the only gender identity that we've heard of, apart from you know, being a male and female, is the third gender or the Hijra community in India, and we don't know what a transgender as an umbrella term means, or who is a transgender gendered person, you know, or who's a gender fluid person and things like that. So I want to put it out there that yes, I can understand that maybe at a policy level, at a government level, at a legal level, this information is not very much out there, but it is still out there. I mean, we live in the times of internet. We live in the times of, you know, easy access to information and knowledge and, you know, Google and Wikipedia and everything. So I think it should not be very hard for anyone to access that knowledge. You have to also start reflecting and start questioning that, is it really the lack of knowledge, or is it you having a lot of prejudice or having your own set of misconceptions and ignorance or judgment that is stopping you or creating a barrier in you trying to know about the relevant issues and concerns in our society? Yeah. The fourth misconception is, of course, that, you know, what can one person do? You know, like, okay, let's suppose if I have the knowledge, then how is that going to change anything for the queer community? Or how is that going to change anything for the trans community? I'm sorry to say, or to sort of break that illusion, but it is actually going to make a lot of difference, because the community needs support. And just even if you're able to affect one person, even if you're able to affect or change one person's viewpoint towards the community, it's just, it makes a lot of difference. You know, the saying goes that, you know, it takes just one drop to sort of eventually become an ocean. So I think it's all about that. It's, and you have to understand, you being that, even if you are that one person, that in itself is enough. You don't have to affect anyone else per se. I mean, but if you are that just one person, you can be that community support for the queer folks. Moving on to the next, I think, misconception, is that please stop pretending like they do not exist, because they do. It's just that, like I said and stressed before, maybe it's your own prejudice, maybe it's your own privilege, place of privilege, or maybe it's your own judgment or discomfort that's stopping you from acknowledging their presence. And I think it's time to question that, yeah? You have to understand that if you are a heterosexual cisgendered person, there are so many things that come easily to you. There are so many ways in which the society, in which the culture, you know, sort of celebrates you. Be it your anniversaries, be it your, you know, sort of, you know, your having names, labels, like a wife, husband, legalities of anything, or, you know, even as simple as, you know, sort of taking your partner to meet your parents. That in itself is a major milestone for a lot of heterosexual folks. But these small things they're not even there for, you know, the trans and queer community. It doesn't exist. And their struggles are so much more than you can even imagine. I mean, yes, you might say that, okay, we all have stressors in our lives. We all have problems in our lives. True, I don't deny that. Each one of us is fighting our own battles, as, you know, overcoming our own unique challenges. But you have to understand that when you are not, your when your identity is not even valid in the society, your challenges become multifold. And I think it's high time we support their journeys, and, you know, sort of instead of questioning the whys, start asking why not. I think that's the one, you know, statement or one thought I want to leave you with in today's podcast. Don't focus on the whys, focus on why not. Focus on the possibilities. Yeah. All right. So on that note, I'm going to say goodbye to you all. See you soon and stay tuned to the Indian Shrink.